Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions, Master Cheesemaker Program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
Is that some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay. Hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup, available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou were able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
I'm Lou Bank. What the hell are you doing to me, Sergio? You know what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah,
you've heard episodes?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what it sounds like?
Let's try it
again. Do you know the role you're supposed to play? Okay, we're going to do this again. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I am Sergio Garnier.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. And what are we talking about today? Oh, yeah. So, you and I have had this conversation. Is it a conversation, Sergio?
Argument? Fight?
Debate?
Debate? Talk? I don't know.
Something like that. Over and over again. And I think it'd be fun to put it, to record it, to document it.
Okay.
In an episode of Agave Road Trip. One of the things I love, there's a lot I love about you, Sergio, but one of the things I love is that you and I can have very strong disagreements and yet still hang out together. You still let me come back to the ranch.
Yeah, I like having arguments, man. Okay. When there's something, you know, to discuss about and it's tough with you, but it's fun.
Okay, I'll take that. I'm going to take that as a, I don't even know if it was meant as a compliment, but I'll take it as a compliment. So what I want to talk about is certification of Mezcal. You have said to me in the past that you think, like you know, I'm going to let you say it. How do you feel about brands that do not certify their agave spirits as Mezcal?
Well, I think there are two different roads or two different approaches to uncertify Mezcal. The one of the guys that have been doing Mezcal for a long time, that they have been doing it for generations and generations, certain way, that doesn't fit into the certification new rules that Mexican government came up with recently, mm-hmm. which I totally respect, and I understand that context, and I'm totally okay. Well, not that I need to be okay or not, but I think that's okay. But I've seen a lot of brands taking advantage.
You want to name them?
No. Thank you. There are a lot of brands taking advantage of not certifying because it's just easier. You can cut corners, and it's becoming like, it looks like uncertified agave spirits are the new cool kids on the block compared to certified mezcal, which I think is, that's definitely not something I like, because, you know, the mezcal I make is certified.
And you want to be a cool kid.
And it's complicated.
You don't like not being a cool kid,
yeah,
Sergio.
You know, look at my hat, man.
So, okay, I bring it up as a joke, but let's put a fine point on that. Right? What does it mean to be a cool kid?
Trending, or at least like the cool bartenders and agave program directors in, let's say, California, they are like, I don't know, that they are selling this story that most of the cases with some brands that, as I mentioned before, have been making it, you know, smaller batches, like more artisanal, more authentic, because it's not certified. That's what really bothers me.
So
not that they are not good, but also we have really cool, consistent brands that are certifying and also are the same quality, have the same tradition.
So when you certify Mezcal, when somebody certifies Mezcal, there are a bunch of expenses, right? And you've got the expense of certifying the Palenque, Venata, Taberna, right? The production facility.
Yeah.
That's one cost. And that cost is like right up front. Now, when you're talking about these brands, are you primarily talking about brands that source their agave spirits from producers or the producers themselves?
They are indistinct. Like, there are some brands that actually were certifying and then decided to not certify for an economic reason. But they were like brands that they were doing well.
Well, hang on a second.
Like,
hang
even producer second. Owned or not producer owned.
Hang like, on. I'm going to throw a flag cases. On that play, because you're saying that was economic reasons. The only brands I know of that.
Well, economic reasons, and, you know, it's just easier, really. Certification is a pain in the ass for me. Like, it forces to a lot of processes, and, you know, the environmental reason I want to go there, and you tell me when we say that, but the only way to make sure you're being environmentally responsible with your agave supply is by certification. If you're not certifying, there's no way to ensure you are following, you know, the rules.
Okay, now there's two flags. So let me get the first flag out of the way there, right? So you're saying the brands that pulled out of certification did so because it was easier for economic reasons. The only brands I know of, and, you know, maybe you know brands that I don't.
I'm not saying any brand name, so don't.
No, I know that.
Try to take me there,
but the only ones I know of literally are La Locura and Real Monero, which both of them pulled out for the same reason, because in order for them to continue certifying, they would have to change the language they used for an agave, right?
I've seen more brands, so I'm not talking about those.
But it's okay. So we're not talking about them. So other brands that just found it easier.
Which I totally respect. Like, those brands, like, man, take off my hat for them.
Okay. So then the second flag what was the point you just made? Nope.
Environmental responsibility and
good
practices.
So let's go back to the conversation we had before the episode started, right? So you said that when you went to make your first batch of agave spirit, because it wasn't certified the first batch, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when
that's another reason for me not being able to use the word mezcal in what I'm doing. It's also, it doesn't make any sense for me. You know, I don't feel like.
You got to let me get a flag out of the way before you bring up another flag, Sergio.
Okay.
Help me out here, Hermano. So when you had this government entity come in, what was the name of the government entity that came in and said you could harvest these agave from your own land?
So it's actually, they send you a certified technician by Semarnat, that is the agriculture department, and specifically CONAFOR. You know, acronym for...
It doesn't even matter what they... But basically, two bodies. So these are two regulatory bodies.
It's the same one. It's actually Semarnat.
Oh, okay. So it's one regulatory...
And then they linked it to Comercam, in my case, that I certified with Comercam.
But hang on. So if you had decided to make an agave spirit that was not certified as mezcal, then you wouldn't have had to get the approval from Senat?
Yeah, I could just do it, and maybe they could have caught me, and maybe had a fine, or maybe go to jail. I don't know, but I could get away with it if they didn't find out, and I could sell it as agave spirits, and I will be devastating the environment if I wanted to.
Okay, so you're saying in essence, the only way to make sure a mezcal producer is actually getting approval from the government to harvest the agave that they're using to make the mezcal, the only way to do that is if they certify. And if they don't certify, they can get away with anything. And that there are no mezcal brands that currently...
No. I didn't say that. But it's the mechanism that is out there. You can do it because you want to do the right thing, that I think many brands do that. But nothing forces you,
right,
other than the certification linked to the Semarnat permits. The guides, the famous guides, we call it guías. So those are the permits that let you transport your piñas and legally and not get them seized or you know, fined.
Okay, so these other guys who are they're not certifying their spirit as mezcal, that they're putting themselves at risk of having all these fines and having Maguey seized. Yeah.
No, maybe they have. No, well, it's not. It doesn't exclude, like, I definitely think they also have their guides to not certify it. But then in the final product, you can't tell the traceability of that bottle. The only way to tell is through certification.
Oh, goodness. So, okay, so which bottle do you want to pull? Do you want to pull this Creyente bottle and you want to tell me how you can trace everything on that bottle?
Yeah.
You want to do that live? You want to do that live right now?
Yeah, try it.
Okay. Do you mind?
Like,
okay, we're doing is they're on the shelf.
You will not have all the information on.
Well,
now
hang on a second. Are you backing off of the claim?
You will have like the you will scan the QR code. It will take you. Well, actually, Creyente, I think, is now AMA. I'm not sure. They used to be with Comercam, so I don't know what they do. But you have like basic information. You obviously don't have there the information of from which field it was extracted, but Comercam or the certification body has all the traceability of that bottle all the way to the place where it was extracted, and it has the batch has to be linked to a specific, we call it guías, permit of that extraction of that batch of agave.
And you're saying Comercam, not the CRM.
Yeah.
And you're saying that because the CRM just a few years ago was the primary and in fact,
the
sole
only,
regulatory
one,
body,
yeah.
Right? And you're not making the claim that they were doing that work.
That's another
episode,
that
this man. You're saying that this is a whole new, right, day in traceability in mezcal.
It's not perfect, definitely, but it's a mechanism. And I think there's a way to perfect it and improve it, but not having anything, I don't think that's also the way to go.
Why not? I mean, if the thing that you have, well, you're saying free for all. Let's take a different product, just so that we don't have the emotional trauma of talking about mezcal here, right? So, if you think another product that doesn't have traceability, that is still artisanal, that the world loves, I think tacos, right? There is no regulatory body that says, oh, well, if you want to call it a taco, otherwise it's just a tortilla with stuff, right? There's no regulatory body saying what is and is not a taco. And yet, we are in a golden age of tacos.
I totally feel you. But again, if you go to the environmental part, the taco has nothing to do with that example. But then you have no way to because it's you can in the case of Lamparillo, it takes 20 years to extract a piña. And then if you just over-harvest, and then you can really harm Lamparillo population or other very rare agaves because they are very precious. The bottles tend to be more expensive, better business. So then a lot of people could have the temptation of over-harvesting, and then no one will have a way to prevent that from happening or control that. So again, I don't think it's a perfect, but it's something that could help. And from there, we can have a base that we can improve.
You know, if you look I'm going to forget the first name of it, but the red list. So there's this red list that literally tracks all endangered species in the Americas, right? And if you look at that list and you look at all of the agaves on it, and I want to say that the last time I looked, I want to say they had 150 roughly agaves that they were tracking. And of those 150 agaves, something like 78 were endangered or at risk of being endangered species. And then you look at the reasoning for it. And of those 78 that were at risk of disappearing, of becoming extinct, right? Of those 78, 12 of them were noted as being at risk because of mezcal production. You look at those 12, two of them are Tobalá and Cupriata. And both of those were listed as being at risk as a result of mezcal production, not because people were harvesting them to make the mezcal, but because they were literally farming Tobalá and Cupriata at such rates on the land where those two plants had been growing as varietals, multiple varietals. They were tearing out those varietals, tearing up that land that was wildland in order to create farms of a single varietal of each of them. And that's why they're at risk. Our agave is not at risk because people are making too much mezcal. Our agave is at risk, if you read this list, because we as a species are an invasive species. We've got urban sprawl. We've got cattle ranching. We've got farming. All of these things relate to the human population and our growth, not our consumption of mezcal. Like, look, I'm with you. If this were a perfect world and we were able to maintain a population level that wasn't going to destroy our environment, then in fact, having a mechanism that would regulate who can harvest what would be great. But right now, the harvesting of agave, the problem isn't harvesting agave to make mezcal. The problem is tearing agave out of the ground in order to build more shopping centers.
Or wiping out biodiverse natural areas just to farm agave. And then you get rid of the biodiversity that was there before.
Yeah.
That's another problem.
Yeah. That's exactly right. But, you know, so I don't think that the problem is these small brands or even these large brands. I can't think of a single large brand of uncertified agave spirits. So I'm going to go back to small brands. These small brands of uncertified agave spirits, I don't think the problem is that they're not certifying. I think the problem is that we as a species, we humans, just consume too much stuff and take up too much space.
Sure.
And so, like, when I think about your frustration that these brands aren't certifying, like, I get your frustration and I get that you put the hard work in to do it. Mm-hmm. I also get that you're coming in as somebody who doesn't have that connection to the cultural heritage of mezcal, right? Your family
I'm very respectful of that. I don't come from a mezcal family, but I do care about the environment and I do care of doing things the right way, respecting the both sides. For me, the most important basis, the biological part and the social part, cultural heritage part of that. And then, again, certification is not perfect. It's no black or white, but it's something. It's what we have. Let's work on improving and respecting the ones that have been making it, and the language and the rules and the parameters and all the lab tests to be more inclusive, definitely. But not having certification at all, I think that's not also the best option.
Oh, God, I actually do. I think we would be in much better place if anybody who wanted to, if mezcal were literally mezcal.
They're going to begin doing mezcal in China, maybe with and call it mezcal. Yeah. And, you know,
You know what? As long as, in the same way that you can't call it rum unless it's made from sugarcane, right? And I'm sure that that's not true in every country.
Try to do that with champagne or with cognac.
No. But champagne is really, it's just what is not effervescent wine. What's it called? Sparkling wine. Like anybody can make sparkling wine, right? And champagne, like, look, if you wanted to make a denomination of origin for something that was called Mezcal Mapimi, hey, I'm all for that. But I think the word mezcal has a real, like, you want to talk cultural
heritage? Yeah, the word is
complicated. These families that had to pull out of using that word mezcal,
I began, and don't take me, like, I began by saying that I totally respect those families.
But they
are the exception to the rule. Not the exception, but they definitely have to receive a different treatment than that new brands that they want to, okay, here's an opportunity to cut corners and cut expenses. There are some brands doing that.
But what does it mean to respect them? See, I think the respect is give them back the word mezcal.
Exactly.
But I think the only way you can do that is by literally giving back the word mezcal to the world. And again, to use the taco reference, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that Taco Bell makes Taco Bell doesn't diminish the fact that that Chava's Tacos on Grand Avenue off of Western, shout out, I would love a free chilaquiles as a result, that it doesn't diminish the fact that they make amazing tacos. You can have both things. What you can't have is these families, which you can't have, what we do have is these families who literally shepherded the cultural heritage that make mezcal the thing that everybody wants to drink now. It's in all the newspapers and the magazines and on the radio shows and on TV. Electra was drinking mezcal. It's in all of this stuff because these families have maintained that cultural heritage and now they can't have that word.
Definitely wrong, and I don't agree with that. But let me tell you something different about mezcal. I think it will help to protect the mezcal itself. For example, we at least have, I really like about mezcal certification, it has to be 100% agave. We don't have like other spirits that they can use different sources for sugars. So agave, mezcal has to be 100% agave.
Today.
Yeah.
But tomorrow it won't be. Because you and I both know as mezcal.
If you want to have a conversation about what can have happened in the future, then that's impossible.
Well, we don't have to. We can look at the past,
Sergio.
We
can improve what we have.
Tequila. Tequila changed their rules, their normas, as soon as they became big enough that they felt like we need to change the normas.
And it's a good example we have on not what to do with mezcal. So tequila already did that. We have to be careful not to do that because also we can have mezcal artesanal or just mezcal. And then for me as a mezcal artesanal producer, it protects me in a way for people not, for brands not telling you they are giving something that is not. I can give you mezcal artesanal and then you know you'll have mezcal artesanal. And you can give you just mezcal. Again, I know there are a lot of tricks. I know there are a lot of, but again, if we don't have, it's better than having nothing. I think it's very improving what we have, finding the best mechanisms to improve, but without taking out of the picture the families you are mentioning. I totally agree with that.
Except we have taken them out. And I think the only way we can bring them back in is to give the word back to the world. I think mezcal should be...
Or to the families that have been doing
mezcal. The only way to give it back to the families is give it back to the world.
I don't agree with that.
I understand you don't.
It's not black or white. You can find a way just for them, not for this businessman in China.
You can't. Show me. I think you need to allow the businessman in China to make his or her business person, to make his or her or their mezcal. And it'll either be competitive and good or it won't be. You know, the fact that that you've got a Zignum on the market using a diffuser to make mezcal doesn't diminish the fact that you've also got an Ultramundo making this beautiful mezcal. It's not like the Zignum is defining the market, but as the market grows, right now, the vast majority of people who are able to use that word mezcal in commerce look a lot more like me than they do anybody else in this room. And if you're talking about protecting cultural heritage, that's not the way to do it. Open up the word mezcal, give it back to the people. Suddenly, you're going to see a lot more people who look like the people in this room than look like me, able to direct where that market goes. You're going to get competitors from China. You're going to get competitors from Australia. You're going to get South Africa all making mezcal. And it'll either be good or it won't be good.
Maybe there's where we're facing. But I don't like it.
I guess you don't like it, but I tell you, I really don't like the fact that these families who have this cultural heritage use that word mezcal.
And stop using that argument, because I'm with you there. I'm totally agree with that. It's not that part of the, like, you are taking the worst about certification that we need to improve, and they have to find a way to include them. But I don't think it's just open it and just have no regulations and do whatever you want, free for all Chinese mezcal. I don't think that's the way.
And again, I'm going to say that tacos have done just fine without regulation. I think it would be the exact same case with mezcal.
I think it's also a matter of having the information for the consumer. So you mentioned the Signum and the Ultramundo comparison. So with Signum, you know you're getting mezcal that is not artisanal. And then with Ultramundo, I don't know what other brands are doing, but with Ultramundo, you know you're getting an artisanal mezcal. You can see who made it. You have all the traceability back to the field where it grew.
You can't see who
naturally.
Made it.
Yeah?
You can't see who made it.
In my bottle, you can.
Oh, on your bottle?
Yeah.
Are they forcing you to put it on your bottle? Oh,
well, yeah,
Sergio,
you need to have a producer, not the name of a person, but definitely you need to know who produced it. I don't know if it doesn't show in the label, but if it's there, the information, and you can ask for that information.
And
so you have
the CRM is always, or Comercam, whatever you want to call them now, they're always really thorough about documenting who made that certified mezcal, aren't they?
I'm not here defending Comercam or any group. I'm just the certification process doing correctly, considering the families and the people who need to be included in the mezcal. I'm not talking about a specific body. I think there are a lot of things to improve, but definitely I think certification is a better way.
I think you're right. I think there are a lot of ways to improve, but I am more than certain that as my mezcal, like last year, not last year, because this is 2024, in 2022, mezcal was 2.4% of tequila by volume, 2.4%. And as it grows, you're going to see more and more large companies getting into the business. And as they get into the business, they're going to find ways to make it more efficient. And as they find ways to make it more efficient, it's not going to move in the direction that you're hoping it is. It's not like those large companies will go, oh, we got to take care of our friend Lalo and make sure that he can use the word mezcal. It's going to go in the direction of, oh, yeah, well, if we just use 20% sugar cane, is that bad? And I would actually say, you know what? It's not bad as long as I can still get Lalo.
I think what will happen in the future is more related to what the mezcal drinkers will decide. But I think give them the right information and let them decide.
Yeah, you're saying they decide. And this is my great frustration is when people have this conversation, they always imagine that there's one decision and everybody makes the decision. But the truth is, if you look at tequila, right? If you look at tequila, you're seeing a few different trajectories. You're seeing the people who are just focusing on, I want my tequila without additives. Then you're seeing the people who are focused on, I want my tequila where it's only cooked underground in the stone lined earthen oven. Like you see all these different, and you get the trajectory of people who really just want the stuff that's made with the additives. Because that, I love that taste of birthday cake.
And that's,
you're going to see all of these. They're not mutually exclusive.
Just give them information and let them decide. What I don't think is fair is, for example, the additive example you used. At least tell me there's additives in my bottle, you know? And then I will decide if I like the birthday cake additive flavor in my bottle or not.
You know, it's funny. I don't even disagree with that. But the truth is, you've got that on every other product and nobody cares that there are additives in everything else. Except Lalo. He won't eat Doritos, even when I try to get him to eat Doritos.
Let the drinker decide. But just give him the right information.
Hey, I'm all for that. Once they start putting ingredients on the bottles, I'm 100% for that. Anyway, we started the conversation off with you saying you were tired of not being one of the cool kids, Sergio. You are always a cool kid to me.
Thanks, Lou. For me, that's what matters.
Okay. I think we're going to call that a wrap. I'll catch you next episode.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends. And please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.